Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Thursday, October 3rd. This is your show that recaps Major League Baseball on a daily basis, the action from the games, the off-the-field stuff, the dumb things the owners say. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, another great day of baseball. All four series were played. Three of them were decided. We're going to get into what happened in Mets Brewers and what to expect on Thursday as the lone game. But before we do that, if we're ranking the surprises in this wild card round from the three eliminations, the biggest surprise by far has to be that the Houston Astros lose 5-2 to the Detroit Tigers and are done. And this is a surprise because we've seen this Astros team make the wild card or the World Series in each of the last, what, 6-7 years? And they're done in the wild card round this year.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, this is wild to me. I didn't think that we were going to see that. I'd put my predictions out before the playoffs started, and I had them returning yet to another ALCS because it just seemed to be the right thing to do, the inevitable thing to do, Lindsey, after their terrible start at the beginning of the season, starting off with a franchise worst record to begin the year since 1969, and then they find a way to come back. But the only team that could outdo them was the Detroit Tigers, who had a 0.2% chance of making it on August 1st, according to FanGraphs, and they find a way to make the postseason. And they have shown grit. It has been very, very exciting to watch these Tigers play. And now you're talking about a team that has A.J. Hinch as their manager. There's some poetic justice to this victory here. Mm-hmm. A.J. Hinch as his manager comes back to Houston and gets the win. You have Justin Verlander, who was traded to the Astros, sitting on the sideline, wasn't added to the postseason roster, but I'm sure you saw the iconic photo of him after the game was done and Tigers clinched. They show Verlander, and then while they're showing Verlander, they put the little graphic up saying Tigers advanced ALDS while he's wearing an Astros hat. I thought that was quite poetic in itself as well. There's a lot of things that I think this series went down as some really interesting things. You can talk about how, in the second game that the Tigers used a bullpen game and it worked out in their favor. And then the bullpen of the Astros, who is supposed to be really good, one of the best closers in baseball, breaks it down. So there's a lot of really interesting things with this game and this series in general. And I'll be honest with you, Lindsey, I don't know if I want to face the Tigers going into that ALDS. They look like a very tough team. They look like they got it all figured out. They might be this year's Diamondbacks or Texas Rangers.
Yeah. The score is 2-1 Astros in the eighth inning. The Tigers put up 4 runs off of Ryan Pressly, who takes the loss and the blown save, and Josh Hader. And there was a really interesting viral tweet that went around after the game talking about the 2024 salary of Josh Hader is $19 million. I mean, he was charged with 3 runs, 1 hit, 2 walks, no strikeouts in the final inning in a third. $19 million for Josh Hader this year. The entire 26-man roster for the Tigers is making just $18.8 million. So Josh Hader alone this season was paid more than the 26-man roster of the Tigers, which is obviously a thing in and of itself. And, they have spent money on guys that have not worked out, like Javi Baez and things like that. They were spending from Miguel Cabrera and stuff, but still absolutely wild that that's a stat. And I mean, this game had almost everything. You saw Parker Meadows leading off. He goes 1-for-5, scores a run, drives one in. Just a lot of stuff from a lot of different people. Nobody really dominated. Nobody had more than one hit. Nobody got on base. I think Colt Keith's the only guy who got on base twice, and it was 2 walks. Everybody else, no, Matt Veerland also got on with a hit and a walk. But a lot of, like, this was just a team effort, and the Tigers were just the better team. And on tomorrow's show, because there's no games on Friday night, we're going to kind of go through these three teams that were eliminated, and then whoever Mets and Brewers is out, and talk about their offseason and what they have to do and everything. But for for the Astros. You can't imagine there's any major changes to this team, right? Like, this is, it's just, it's a bad series, and they're going to do their best not to overreact to this is kind of what it feels like, right?
Yeah, in overreaction portions, I don't think there's going to be some big changes to the team. I do think that there's a possibility that changes come to the team regardless of what would have happened to their outcome. For example, Alex Bregman's going to be a free agent this offseason, right?
So he tweeted, thank you, Houston, after the game. And so that's one of those people are like, okay, he's thinking he's gone. We'll see.
Yeah. And regardless, I think that's going to be wild. I think he's going to be one of the best free agents on the market. I think that Bleacher Report put something out just the other day, power ranked the upcoming free agents, and they had him as second or third. So, I mean, there's going to be plenty of people, plenty of suitors going after him, especially since Matt Chapman already signed with the San Francisco Giants to an extension. So there's a lot of things going on, but this is the first time since the 2001 National League Division Series that the Astros have made it to the postseason and have not won a postseason round. So there obviously is some disappointment. There's no doubt about that. But when you start off the way you started the season and you still come back to win the division and still make the postseason, you know, it's kind of like the Braves. You can't be too upset. At least you made it there. And I know expectations for Astros fans are very high after what they've done, made the World Series in four of the last 7 years. But you got to still be proud of what this team has accomplished with all of the adversity they had to overcome. And they just ran to arguably the hottest team in baseball right now. It just happens to be the young and grueling Detroit Tigers, which is crazy to say after what they've been the last few seasons, that this is a team that could run the damn table, Lindsay.
The gritty tigs. Yeah, absolutely love it. So Detroit now advances to take on the Cleveland Guardians, two teams that have seen each other plenty because they were in the same division. That series will start Saturday. ALDS Game 1 is scheduled for 1:08 Eastern. The American League Divisional Series will be televised on TBS. All right, moving on to the next biggest surprise. And not a surprise if you listen to First Pitch, because that's what I predicted. But the Kansas City Royals took down the Baltimore Orioles 2-1 to send the Orioles home again. That is now two straight postseasons where Baltimore has been swept and not even won a game. They score a grand total of one run across their two games in this postseason. And the story here was the top of the order. Michael Massey leads off 2-for-4. He scores a run. Bobby Witt goes 2-for-5. He drove one of those runs in. Vinny Pascantino batting third. He goes 2-for-4. He drives the other run in. And the pitching for Baltimore just didn't necessarily hold up like they expected. Zach Gaflin gives you four innings. Puts five men on, four hits and a walk, allows a run to score, strikes out only three. And then Ciano Perez in the bullpen takes the loss, allowing two hits and a run in the sixth inning while only recording one out. Baltimore finishes with only six hits. Baltimore, again, one run across the two games. Before we get into Kansas City in the next round and what they did, how significant is the shakeup going to be, you think, for Baltimore this offseason? Because it's now two seasons of getting into the postseason easily, division title, number one wild card, and then significantly underperforming when you get there.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be some shakeup, but I don't think it's going to be as drastic as some people are expecting. I think we'll still see Brandon Hyde back. I think we'll still see basically everybody you can think of back. I think what we're going to see, Lindsay, and I hope this is the case, because we've been kind of asking for this as baseball fans for the last 2 years, in this offseason, and it happened with Corbin Burns, so I guess we could say that, but in the offseason, we are going to get another big deal heading to the Baltimore Orioles. I think it might be to solidify maybe, a corner infield spot, like third base, maybe a corner outfield spot. Maybe it's to sign and extend Anthony Santander. Maybe that's the big deal because he's about to be a pending free agent. But regardless of the case, the Orioles have, not done well in the postseason the last two seasons. They have not won a playoff game in the last 2 years. They've been swept both times they've gone in. They won 101 games last year. They won 91 this year, but clinched the top wild card spot. there's some issues that need to happen. You can't find they got to find a way to make that next step, and something has to give. They have a great rotation if they're healthy. They have a great young core, but something needs to change. This is their 10th straight playoff loss, Lindsay. And what's crazy, and I think we need to start talking about this more, between the Royals and the Orioles, that this needs to be a rivalry. Not because they both have young cores and they're exciting, but 7 of those last 10 games have come against the Royals. 7 Baltimore of those last 10 games. Yeah, it's insane.
Baltimore has had their number. And the offseason for the Orioles is going to be fascinating. They have, I believe it's an MLB high 15 arbitration eligible players. You already mentioned Anthony Santander will be a free agent. But like Adley Rutschman getting to arbitration for the first time in his career. MLB trade rumors projected him to make $5.8 million in arbitration. Cedric Mullins, $8.7 million projection. Ryan Mountcastle, $6.6 million. Like this roster, we saw them go a little bit financially out. They signed Craig Kimbrell to a big money deal that did not work out, paying Corbin Burns' salary and arbitration this year. We saw them extend a little bit this season in signings, a thing they haven't really done. Under new ownership, this roster is going to get more expensive. 15 guys in arbitration. The question here is definitely how aggressive are they willing to be in free agency, given that fact, as they try to figure out what they need to push themselves over the top? They have a ton of position player talent. The young pitching talent has not necessarily been as productive at the major league level as they hoped, and now Corbin Burns is potentially walking. Do they make a big trade for a frontline pitcher? Do they try to bring Burns back? Do they go after one of the other pending free agents, a Max Fried, somebody like that? That to me is ultimately probably going to be the determinator, like the determining factor for next season, is how aggressive is Baltimore at spending money to improve their roster versus just maintaining a playoff caliber team, but one that can't advance.
Yeah, on the flip side, go ahead. I'll say, when you look at their roster on paper, and it works. Like, it sounds like, okay, this is a team that can win baseball games. There's no doubt about it. When you look at their roster at the beginning of the season, you're like, this is a team that can win the World Series. When you looked at Corbin Burns, you looked at Kyle Bradish, Grayson Rodriguez, John Means, all of those guys that were hurt, Felix Bautista. That's a huge loss that we don't really talk about, because he's a reliever, but he was a huge asset to that 101 win team in 2023. Getting those guys back, getting Grayson Rodriguez back, getting Felix Bautista back, Kyle Bradish, you know, all those, and then adding a number one starter again, whether it's bringing back Burns or going after somebody else, trade or free agency.
Garrett Crochet, maybe.
That's true. Yeah. To me, that might be enough for them to say, hey, let's run it back one more time. Let's see what we got, because we finally can have a chance to be healthy. And if it doesn't work from here on out, then we need to make one more trade. So I'm going to give Mike Elias one more year to be a little bit conservative with his trades and his prospects, because as of right now, we didn't see the full Baltimore Orioles because of all those injuries. So I personally, as I get excited and throw my computer around and bounce up and down with this camera, I personally am going to be a little bit more conservative.
Yeah, and it's just, they have the talent in the farm system to do really whatever they want to do. And we've been saying this now for 2 years. If they want to go out and get not any player in baseball, they're not trading for Shohei Ohtani, but they can get any available player within reason that they want to. And so, like, we've been saying that for a while via trade, but free agency's not been that way. Let's see what they do. The flip side of it here, though, Kansas City, another AL Central team that gets it done. They didn't score a lot of runs. I mean, they've scored a grand total of 3 runs in 2 games here. This was an issue for them back in September. They were the lowest scoring team in baseball in September, but they found a way to get it done so far. Seth Lugo goes 4 1/3, 5 hits, 1 walk, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. He does give up a homer to Cedric Mullins in the fifth inning. That was the only run allowed by him. Can they continue to win in these incredibly close games where they essentially have to be perfect in every respect? The bullpen goes 4 2/3 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. They are moving on to face the New York Yankees? Is this blueprint, this low scoring, squeak out a clutch run and use a shutdown bullpen, is this sustainable against New York, or are they destined to lose this series because of it?
Yeah, their offense is going to have to step up. There's no doubt about it. But if it becomes low scoring games, which is possible it does, I have faith in this Kansas City Royals bullpen and this pitching staff as well. You know, and they only had to use Reagans and Lugo. You still have guys waiting in the wings that can be ready to go and fresh on Saturday against the Yankees. Can we talk about Lucas Erceg for a minute? Because I think that he might be, and if there might be maybe one player above him, but I think he was the best trade at the deadline for any team. What he has done for this Royals team, he has solidified the back of that bullpen. He has a 2.88 ERA and 11 saves since going over to the Kansas City Royals. He's been incredible, and what he's done in the wild card round so far, his play in both game one and game two have been just lights out. So I have to give a shout out there. You already talked about how great this pitching staff is with Reagans and Lugo and Waka, and there's just a lot of really good pitchers on this core, Lindsay, on this team. And then you add a guy like Erceg to throw in the back of your bullpen. Oh, and by the way, you got Will Smith. Let's not forget about Will Smith, the guy who has been to the World Series in what, last 3 years with different teams? So
and won, I mean, all three.
If you're a betting man, you have a feeling that the Royals are going to beat the Yankees, they're going to win the ALCS, and they're going to get to the World Series. So this is just the first step, and it's all the Will Smith effect.
Yep. Game one, Kansas City at New York. They'll be in the Bronx. That is 6:38 on Saturday on TBS. Another series that is wrapped up in kind of the way, or kind of the expectation that we all had. My Atlanta Braves dropped Game two to the Padres 5-4. Braves are eliminated in their first round matchup in the third consecutive season. They lost the NLDS in 22 and 23 to the Phillies, and now lost to the Padres in 2024 in the wild card round. Before we get to San Diego, for Atlanta, it feels like this loss is both similar to the last two and completely different, because the last two, they were division winners. They came in hot, and pitching in issues cropped up in the postseason. You had Spencer Strider coming off an illness 2 years ago. Max Fried had been hurt. Their starts didn't go well. Last year, you had Strider got shelled a little bit. Max Fried coming off a finger blister. Charlie Morton unavailable. They had to start Bryce Elder in game three. They get blasted. This year, Chris Sale unavailable with a back. They start AJ Smith-Shawver in game one. He gets blasted. And then Max Fried takes a comebacker off the hip. I think it was like 105 miles an hour by Fernando Tatis Jr. And it starts giving him issues in the second inning. He gives up 5 runs on 6 consecutive hits. Gets pulled after just 2 innings. Atlanta fights valiantly, but just can't seem to come back. Is this, because of all the injuries Atlanta had this year, is this loss different from the previous years, or is this just another disappointing postseason finish for Atlanta?
Oh, no, I don't think it's disappointing at all. I think the fact that they made it is impressive in itself. And I said that kind of about the Houston Astros at the beginning of this episode, but it's even more impressive with the Atlanta Braves. I mean, they lost their top pitcher in Spencer Strider. They lost Ronald Acuna Jr., the former reigning National League MVP, who had a 40-70 season last year. You don't get that production. You've had injuries to Sean Murphy. You've had injuries to Michael Harris. I could go on and on. Austin Riley didn't make the postseason roster because he's hurt, and you still found a way to make it there. The bottom of that batting order, Lindsay, is nowhere close to where it was in 2021 when they won the World Series. Ozzie Albies was batting second in this game. I'm pretty sure he batted eighth in the 2021 World Series, right in front of Dansby Swanson. The bottom of your lineup was Ozzie Albies, Dansby Swanson, I think your catcher, Denard or McCann or whoever it was. I mean, that's a lot different than what it was than we saw yesterday's in lineup, right? So I don't think this was a letdown. Obviously, it's a huge disappointment to fans, you know, and Braves fans, because this team did have the potential to do so. And what Chris Sale did this year on the mound, obviously going to win the National League Cy Young. You know, it's
despite what Philly's fans keep arguing,
Right. Yeah. Zach Wheeler has a great season. Don't get me wrong, but Chris Sale's numbers are better and Chris Sale deserves the Cy Young, even though he didn't make his final start. I'll buy on that hill, but I do think that you got to hang your hat somewhere with these Braves. And mm-hmm. to me, it's just making the postseason was good enough. This team will be very good next season. Even if Max Fried walks, when Ronald Acuna comes back, when Spencer Strider comes back, you know, Alex Anthopoulos is going to make some kind of big deal. It's going to be a huge offseason for Atlanta. So I'm not too upset or too worried about them, I guess I should say. But I would have liked to see them make some sort of run because it was a pretty magical story finding them way to get into the postseason.
Yeah. OptiStats, this is a stats perform. The company, the statistical company Stats Perform, this was their Twitter account, OptiStats. They put out a thing on Monday that said, no other MLB team has made the playoffs in a year where three of their opening day starters missed the final 35 plus regular season games on the injured list. They're referring to Spencer Strider, Ronald Acuna Jr., and Austin Riley. And that, I think, in and of itself is a big loss, but that even understates the losses Atlanta had, because I keep throwing this out there all year. Atlanta's opening day lineup got a grand total of 7 innings together. Sean Murphy got hurt in the 7th inning of the first game of the year, and that group of players never got all completely back together on the field at the same time the entire season. So to even make the postseason was great. A lot of questions for them. If you're watching this and you want to hear more about that Braves Today podcast, we're going to go into detail on that.
One question that they don't have to answer, though, is Michael Harris. Michael Harris, it was incredible in the month of September. He was incredible in the postseason run. He was obviously their MVP for the wild card round, even though they didn't really make much moves. But him trying to come back last night with that home run in the 8th inning, I believe it was incredible. And off Adam, too, because that Padres bullpen, and I know we're switching over to them, and I think this is a good segue. That Padres bullpen is nasty, Lindsay, and we're set up for – are we set up for the best divisional series that we could have asked for, Dodgers versus Padres? Because I think that's the greatest rivalry in baseball right now, personally.
I think we're getting there. So close the book on Harris. 3-for-4 last night, 2 runs, 2 RBI, triple short of the cycle, also made a good catch in center field, just kind of what he continues to do. A guy that had been a 2020 guy his first 2 years, batting close to 300, dealt with a lot of injury this year, missed multiple months with a hamstring issue. But you could see how getting him back could be huge, and getting him, having him hot could be big for this team next year. But yeah, moving on to the Padres, we saw kind of a familiar pitching plan here. You know, they go with Jason Adam, they go with Robert Suarez at the end. So Adam's got 2 holds. Suarez has 2 finished games, got the save last night in a scoreless 9th inning. One bit of concern, though, Joe Musgrove leaves this start after 3 2/3 innings. He was cruising, had allowed 1 hit and 1 run, no walks, 4 strikeouts. But catcher Kyle Higashioka, who hit home runs in 2 straight games in the series, noticed something weird in his windup, took a mound visit, got the trainers to come out. They removed him. San Diego said later it was out of elbow soreness. He's scheduled for an MRI and imaging to figure out what that might have been. How concerned are you about the Padres if they don't have Joe Musgrove available to make a late series start against the Los Angeles Dodgers in this upcoming weekend series?
Yeah, it sucks not having Joe Musgrove, but I will say it's very nice to have Yu Darvish just sitting in your bullpen waiting to go. So they'll still be able to have 3 solid starters, you know, with Cease, with Darvish, and with Michael King. But losing Joe Musgrove hurts. There's no doubt about it. They asked him during the celebration last night how he felt, and he said, quote, "I'm frustrated. Don't know what the future looks like for me right now." So the UCL test came back clean. But as you mentioned, he's getting an MRI tomorrow. He was on the injured list for like the same exact kind of injury. We don't know if it's exactly the same, but he had a bone spur in that same elbow earlier this year. He did say it feels, quote, very different than that bone spur. So I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, we don't know.
We'll find out on that one. But regardless, not a good thing to have Joe Musgrove out. I'm assuming no matter what the case is from the MRI, we will not see him on the NLDS roster.
Which is all obviously tough, losing a quality starter like that. And you do feel like you've got, obviously you've got good pitchers. You saw what Michael King did. You've got Dylan Cease, who's now available to start game one. The Padres were the one team that really were conservative with their pitching plan here and held out their staff ace and Dylan Cease as a potential game three starter if they needed him. You saw everybody else. You saw the Orioles go with Corbin Burns in game one. You saw the Royals go with Reagans. The Tigers go with Skuball. Everybody else was aggressive with, we want our best pitcher in game one. The Padres said, we think we can win game, we can win the series without Dylan Cease throwing, and they did. And so you have to like how their pitching lines up versus LA's pitching, all of the injuries the Dodgers have had. You're looking at, there was a nice long article from MLB.com and StatCast guru Mike Petrelio talking about how the Dodgers pitching can get through October. And it was, your starters are Yamamoto, Flaherty, and Walker Buehler. Yamamoto came off, he missed a couple months. He hasn't made a start on less than 5 days rest. He's only thrown 16 innings since he came back. Flaherty had a 2.61 ERA in his first seven starts. He's had a 6.43 in his final three starts. And Walker Buehler, he held the Padres to one run in five innings on September 26th. He also only got one strikeout. And so a lot of questions here. I do agree, jumping ahead a second here, this is probably the most anticipated matchup of the next round, simply because you can see the potential for an upset in this. The Dodgers finishes the one seed or the two seed. The Dodgers are up there in the seeding. The Dodgers were the number one seed. And yeah, it's you can easily see a path for the four seed to come in and knock them off in this series. That'll start at 8:38 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. That's game one. That'll be broadcast on Fox Sports 1. The final game from yesterday, we held this to the end because there's another second game to talk about. Milwaukee Brewers lost game one. They come back 5-3 to win game two and force a game three. Jackson Churio hits two home runs. He gets Sean Manea in the first inning. He was leading off, so leadoff homer there. He comes around. He gets an eighth inning homer off of reliever Phil Maton. Garrett Mitchell also hits a home run off of him in that inning. That was a big three-run inning that gave Milwaukee the lead and gave them the win. If you are New York, are you concerned that we may see the first ever three-game series won by a team that lost game one?
Yes. And if I'm also New York, I'm intentionally walking Jackson Churio the rest of the game in game
to
three.
To open game three, walking.
Regardless of the situation. Yep, I am. You know, stop the count, by the way. 1750 OPS in his career postseason for Jackson Churio right now.
It's two games. That sample size is not. We can't use that. We can't
stop
use
the
that.
Count. That's what I said. Oh, stop man. The count. Yeah. No, but two home runs, three RBIs. He's been incredible. I was listening to the Braves radio when I was driving home yesterday, and this game went final, and the Braves announcer said, "This kid is too young to worry about the spotlight or to worry about the momentum or the stress or anything about the postseason." And it's starting to show that way. Only 20 years old, and he's making sure that it's not bothering him at all. The bright lights of the postseason is not bothering Jackson Churio. He's looking really good. And what a rookie class we have, period. Jackson Churio right now, you know, you're talking about how great he's in the postseason. He's probably going to finish fourth in the National League Rookie of the Year. It's crazy to think of
the rookie class. Jackson Churio, Jackson Merrill, Paul Skeens in this rookie class, Colton Cowser, Austin Wells for the Yankees. Like, some of these guys are obviously not in the postseason or eliminated from the postseason, but still great rookie class this year. And one we're going to go back and look at in a couple of years and be like, that was one of the better ones that we've seen in recent history. Just they've been, not only have they been good, they've been impactful. Yep. Jackson Merrill, I want to say had multiple extra base hits and some great diving catches in center field against Atlanta. Churio hitting multiple home runs here in this game, including, getting part of the comeback in the eighth inning. Fantastic class. The finale today, Jose Quintana versus Tobias Myers. Myers 3-1 with a 3.38 ERA in his last seven games. You know, compare him to a guy like Quintana, who is one of their better starters. Postseason, he hasn't done much, but his last seven games, he's 4-2 with a 2.18 ERA. I don't really know who to think is going to win this. I don't really know who to favor in this. It just feels like this is going to be another really good, really close game, right?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think it's going to be a great game. I'm leaning towards the Milwaukee Brewers, though. I'm going to lean towards Pat Murphy. I'm going to lean towards that Milwaukee bullpen. They had a tough game one. I think they bounced back nicely. They bounced it back pretty decent yesterday, too. And late inning heroics, if I had to pick who right now, Pete Alonso's not looking very good in this postseason. Francisco Lindor obviously is doing his thing. Don't get me wrong. But I'm going with the young. I'm going with the young core here. It worked for Detroit. I think it's going to work for Milwaukee as well. I'm going to ride the hot hand, and I'm going with the Milwaukee Brewers to win this one.
Pete Alonso goes 1-for-4 yesterday, and you know they pick up 8 hits, only score 3 runs. I believe every single one of their hits were singles. Not a single extra base hit against the Brewers and 6 different pitchers. You know, not a single extra base hit. They score 3 runs off of Frankie Montas, but only one of them is earned on 6 hits and 1 walk and 3 2/3. I do feel like there's something about this Milwaukee team. And it's not the same thing that we attribute to the Tigers, because the Tigers have that youthful energy. The Tigers are like, you can notice when you're watching Detroit that team is just hot right now. And the Milwaukee's hot, don't get me wrong, but it feels like this Milwaukee team is just confident, that they just are quietly confident, that they know what they're doing. They're not fazed by the prospect of being behind, having to rally. They've got a lot of postseason experience just based like over the last couple years of winning the division. Although some of these guys are still really relatively new to the postseason. Joey Ortiz, Churio, obviously. It just feels like they are comfortable in these situations and nothing really rattles them. And so it's hard for me to pick against them in game 3. I do think that the Mets probably have a little bit of an advantage in the pitching matchup, but it's hard for me to count out the Milwaukee Brewers, because all we've done all year is count out the Milwaukee Brewers. We did it before the season started. We did it during the season. And all that they did is just win the division like they always do.
Yep.
Get in, start making noise in the postseason just like they always do, despite more subtractions here than any recent season. And so, yeah, it's hard for me to say that the Mets are going to do this, simply because it feels like this is the Brewers' game to take.
And the prophecy can still be answered, Lindsay. Reese Hoskins 0-for-7 so far in this postseason. He's just asking to put the Mets to bed in game 3.
If he gets one big hit in game 3, puts the Mets away, nobody will care about the other swings and misses or flyouts or whatever. And he'll get to go on Saturday at 4:08 p.m. and take on the Philadelphia Phillies in Citizens Bank Park. This stuff writes itself, people.
We share the script.
This is the way you'd have scripted this up if you were in Hollywood. So, all right. This is, again, that is the only game today. Brewers met 7:08 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. So enjoy that. But if you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop the next episode. And either way, tell your friends that if they missed any of the games or just want a better perspective on what's going on across Major League Baseball, they can go find the First Pitch podcast from Lindsey Crosby and Christian Rau. Until tomorrow's show, enjoy the game tonight. This has been First Pitch.